If a Chinese person came through that door and I asked him his name and he said his name was Patrick Murphy, you'd know he forgot his own name and has picked up an alias somewhere. So, if a yellow man looks ridiculous wearing an Irish name, which is a white man's name, how much more absurd does a black man look wearing a white man's name?
You may recognize that voice, a man who was born Malcolm Little, took the name of El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, but was best known to the world as Malcolm X. And what you just heard is part of a speech given by Malcolm X at Brown University in 1961. It was a speech that was forgotten and a recording that got lost until another Malcolm, a student at Brown named Malcolm Burnley, found a reel-to-reel tape in the archives of the school library. And Malcolm Burnley joins us today. Malcolm, not only the amazing event of you actually discovering this tape, but how did you know when you found it that you'd found something special?
Well, thank you, first of all, so much for having me on. It was interesting. It all began as part of a class assignment, and I had actually been researching the story of how Malcolm X came to Brown before I uncovered the tape. So I had no idea what was going to be said and how interesting it really would be when I finally listened to it. And they had to send it off and get it digitized, and they sent it back. But immediately when you listen to it, you already hear the incredible nuance and cadence of Malcolm X as a public speaker. And it really comes across. You hear the audience laughing and gasping and clapping, and really shows his wide range as a public speaker that I immediately knew it was quite a treasure.
You get the idea of how charismatic he was and why he inspired so many people.
Yeah, and I interviewed several audience members from 50 years ago, and what's fascinating about all the interviews is no one really could remember the specifics of what he said, but they were just all in awe in remembrance of his presence on stage and being very swayed by the manner he delivered it in, even though they couldn't remember the specifics of the words. So I very much expected something remarkable, but I didn't know the specific content of it, and it really delivered, though.
Yeah, you found something remarkable.
No, we're not anti-white, but we don't have time for the white man. The white man is on top already. The white man is the boss already. The white man has economic security already. He has first-class citizenship already. So you're wasting your time talking to the white man. We are working on our people.
That's the sound of Malcolm X, a speech that has not been heard since it was given at Brown University in 1961. You were doing your paper, or your project, as you say, about how he came to be at Brown University. And we have the person with us who helped make that happen. Catherine Pierce joins us as well this morning. The article, Catherine, that you wrote was edited by a fellow student who'd become a leading diplomat, Richard Holbrooke. Tell us about the article and how it brought Malcolm X to Brown University in the 1960s.
Well, shortly after we published the article, the black Muslims heard about it. And within really a couple of days, someone had called the Brown Daily Herald and wanted to talk to us about the article. And after a short time, they offered to arrange for Malcolm X to come to Brown University and speak to us.
What was it that was in your article that caught the attention of the activist group that supported Malcolm X?
Well, I didn't really agree with the philosophy of the black Muslims as it was expressed in those days, which was that separatism was better than integration, basically. And I'm afraid that was expressed in the article.
And it was something they wanted Malcolm X actually to come to Brown University to refute. And here's another bit of his speech in which he's talking about Muslim faith.
I am thankful to Allah for those of you who are here this evening, because to me it shows that you have an open mind. And I don't think you came here for me to convert you into being a Muslim, nor do I think that you think I came here for you to convert me back to being a Christian. When Eisenhower and Khrushchev sat down and talked to each other, Ike wasn't trying to make Khrushchev a capitalist, nor was Khrushchev trying to make Eisenhower a communist. They weren't there to convert each other, but their intelligence enabled them to recognize the times, the conditions, and the importance of each other's position.
And I want to go back here to Malcolm Burnley, the young student at Brown who discovered this reel-to-reel recording that hadn't been heard since the speech was given, basically. Malcolm, what he's saying right there is unique in terms of many of his speeches that he gives, because he's talking about international issues, which is not something he often spoke about.
Yeah, in several ways, the speech is really unique. First, you hear just kind of his professorial cadence, and he's not as aggressive as often his speeches were at that time in 1961. He speaks much more in an international, kind of anti-colonial, global context about Muslims across the world. And a lot of those tenets of his speeches weren't so common until years later in 1963 and 1964, prior to when he broke with the Nation of Islam. Malcolm X started moving towards Orthodox Islam and kind of moderated a lot of his views. And you hear a lot of that come across in this Brown speech years before many people often date that move towards more moderation.
Why do you think, Malcolm, and I'm going to ask this to Catherine as well, why was he less aggressive than he was at other speeches in the early 1960s?
There's a few hypotheses I have about that. Is one, the audience was mixed. So it was about 75% white and about 25% black. And so kind of appealing to a mixed audience, perhaps he kind of had to, hedge his bets almost and be a little less aggressive. But the second reason was that evening at Brown 50 years ago, he was originally supposed to debate a member of the NAACP who backed out that afternoon. So kind of on the fly, Malcolm had to prepare a speech. And at the time, he had just returned from Africa about a year before. And his trip to Africa really started moving him towards mainstream Islam. But at the time, again, he hadn't voiced this publicly. So when he had to prepare this speech on the fly, I think maybe he kind of revealed a lot of what he was thinking about internally at the time and a lot of his personal movement in that direction, but often didn't come across in public.
Well, Catherine Pierce, you were there at the speech. In fact, I understand that you introduced him. You're the one that held on to this audio recording of the speech for about half a century. How does what Malcolm just said match up with what you saw and heard in 1961? Did Malcolm seem professorial to you then?
I would agree completely with what Malcolm Burnley just said, adding only that part of Malcolm X's charisma was his ability to read his audience and to draw in others with the compelling force of his personality. And he could tell that this was not a group that was going to be won over easily, but rather this was an opportunity for him to educate a greater public.
Well, what about you? Were you drawn in by his charisma?
Oh, yes. He was a fascinating person. He was very attractive physically, very confident, self-assured. He had beautiful stage presence, and he was very compelling and captivating. Regardless of his words, you were forced to listen to him because of his practiced and beautiful delivery.
So you held on to the speech for decades, Catherine.
Yeah.
How did it get lost?
Well, at the end of the school year, I think it was found in the Brown Daily Herald offices, and somebody gave it to me. I assumed at the time that it was one of many copies, and therefore rather, somewhat insignificant. But as the years went by, and I would occasionally come upon it in the back of a bureau or something, I began to think maybe there aren't that many copies of it. And so finally, I decided that I should see if anyone would be interested in it.
Well, I think a lot of people were interested in it. Catherine Pierce, it was her article in the Brown University newspaper that inspired Malcolm X to visit the Brown University campus, and her recording that Malcolm Burnley discovered in the library there, a senior at Brown University. Thanks to both of you.
Oh, thank you so much
thank
for having
you.
Us.
There are 725 million people in Africa and Asia whose religion is Islam, whose God is Allah, and who believe in all of the prophets the same as we. There are 725 million people in Africa and Asia, that strategic area today which Uncle Sam is trying to make friends, in which Uncle Sam is trying to make friends. All of them turn five times a day eastward toward Mecca and give praise to Allah by saying, La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah, which to the Muslim means, there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is the apostle of Allah.
There's no voice like Malcolm X's, that's for sure, in 1961. That's what that recording is from. Give us your view, your reaction at 877-8MY-TAKE or post anything to our site at thetakeaway.org. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.